News. I'm Michelle Franz, and polls start closing in a few hours for Super Tuesday races. Voters across the country weighing in on presidential races. ABC's political director, Rick Klein, says the stakes are highest for Nikki Haley's campaign.
There's a huge number of states voting. It is truly a nationwide set of contests, California up through New England. But in a lot of those states, Nikki Haley has virtually no chance of winning any delegates. California basically off the map for her. Same thing in a bunch of southern states where Donald Trump is likely to get all or almost all of the delegates.
Talks between the U.S. and Arab nations continuing to finalize a six-week ceasefire and hostage release deal to have it in place before the start of the Islamic holiday, Ramadan, this Sunday. Hamas says it wants a full withdrawal of Israeli forces. In Michigan, jury selection began today in the involuntary manslaughter trial of James Crumbly. He's the father of convicted Oxford High School shooter Ethan Crumbly. Mom Jennifer Crumbly was found guilty on similar charges last month. This is ABC News.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. More than 1,400 pages of newly released documents show how two lawyers from Wisconsin tried to overturn President Biden's 2020 victory in the state. James Troupas and Kenneth Chesbro turned over the records yesterday to settle a lawsuit. The papers show how they put together slates of fake electors in Wisconsin and six other battleground states. Today is Super Tuesday. Voters in 15 states and American Samoa should put President Biden and Donald Trump closer to their party's nominations. Biden surrogate Malcolm Kenyatta tells WISN-TV's Upfront he's not concerned the president is losing in battleground states.
Whether it's Wisconsin or Michigan or Pennsylvania, you know, these are states that have always been close.
Wisconsin is one of a handful of states expected to decide the winner in November. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News. Now here's what you need to know closer to home.
For WISS WGBW News, I'm Lisa Hale. As police are continuing their search for 3-year-old Elijah Vu, they've requested information on a vehicle of interest in the case. Two Rivers Police Chief Ben Meinert says they have the vehicle, which is a beige 1997 four-door Nissan Altima with a Wisconsin plate that starts with A and ends with zero. What they need is video from surveillance cameras on February 19th between the hours of 2 and 9 p.m. Meinert is asking everyone, even those not in the Two Rivers area, to check for any footage they might have. Drivers need to remember to manually turn on their headlights. The Wisconsin DOT says this time of year brings changing weather conditions, and while many vehicles have automatic settings, those aren't always reliable. Headlights are required at dusk, at night, and in adverse weather conditions. And that's what you need to know. I'm Lisa Hale, WISS WGBW News.
This message is for Shauna, my mom, who just finished her high school diploma. I wanted to say I'm so proud of you for finishing school. You taught me it's never too late to achieve your dreams. I hope to make you as proud as you have made me.
When you graduate, they graduate. Finish your high school diploma for you and for them. Visit finishyourdiploma.org to find free and supportive adult education centers near you. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
The Brewers back in action. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. After a day off, the Brewers back at it in spring training baseball with a game today against the Giants, then a split doubleheader tomorrow against the Reds and the Guardians. Milwaukee now 3-6 in Cactus League action, but manager Pat Murphy doesn't want to discourage his young players.
I always say, prepare to play good, treat yourself good. Which one do you think's the toughest? Treating yourself good. Kids, they still need help because they'll beat themselves up. They'll put their expectations so high. That's the part, you know.
Hockey, the UW-Madison men's hockey team, getting ready to host the Big Ten playoffs this weekend against Ohio State, the first game Friday night. NBA, the Bucks with a win over the Clippers, 113-106. Damian Lillard scored 41 points and talked about how Doc Rivers has helped out at head coach.
When he came in, he was just like, you guys don't run this, you guys don't run that. Like, this is stuff we hated to guard against you.
That's the Bucks' Damian Lillard. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Tonight, mostly clear, a low in the upper 20s. And mostly sunny for tomorrow, a nice day with highs into the upper 40s. A mixture of sunshine and clouds Thursday, approaching 50 degrees. Then a chance of rain Thursday night into Friday. Currently, it's 44 degrees.
Hi, I'm Maggie Dawn, host of The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays at 2 on the Civic Media Network.
And I'm Stuart J. Waddles, Civic Media's Southeast Wisconsin News Bureau Chief.
Stuart and I will be hosting special coverage of President Biden's State of the Union speech Thursday night at 8.
We'll, of course, present what the president says, the Republican response, and also talk about what it all means for you.
This will be one of the most important speeches from the president in this critical election year.
This Thursday night at 8 across the Civic Media Radio Network.
Wednesday on Matinee on Air, State Representative Francesca Hong joins us to talk all things politics, along with her love of tater tots, and we learn about the March of Dimes, March for Change. Join us.
Where the fans own the team. This is the talk of Green Bay, 1590 AM and 97.9 FM WGBW. The Devil's Advocates radio show is broadcast under a time brokerage agreement between Devil Radio and Civic Media, Inc. Some portions of this program may be pre-recorded. Warning! You're about to listen to the greatest radio show ever, and due to contractual obligations and to shield our airwaves and corporate licensees from any semblance of liability, responsibility, and gullibility, we must tell you the views represented on this show are not necessarily those of this station or its management. This radio show contains differing points of view on current political topics, and due to the nature of its contents, it should be heard by everyone. Thank you for listening. Now live from the Civic Media Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, where the political party is just beginning, welcome to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. Friends proving it's never personal, only politics.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
And now, here's your hosts, Dom and Crute.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, a Super Tuesday happy hour. Welcome to it, my little buddy.
Hey, Crudy, happy Tuesday, super happy hour to you, man.
You know, I've got a few topics, but I want to start out by pointing out you live one of the most fortunate lives of any human being I've ever known. First and foremost, there's your friendship with me. You're welcome.
And despite that,
you got a great wife and a great life. You lived the life for Riley, I tell you, my friend. But even
I've been
you,
fortunate, Michael.
But even you may not scratch the surface of the luck of Donald Trump. As your buddy Charlie Sykes would describe him here, Dom, the luckiest politician who ever lived. I want to give a little of this coverage and then your calls as well. Happier, happy hour. Love hearing from you at 844-967-2789. Now, Charlie, formerly of the right-wing talk radio in Milwaukee, wrote the book, How the Right Lost Its Mind. Well, you played a part, Charlie. I would just point that out. But here's what he writes at the Post.
That's
today.
How he knows, man. He was there.
A federal judge has declared him liable for rape. He's facing paying $500 million in legal judgments for fraud and defamation, twice impeached, then defeated for re-election. He has been charged with 91 felonies. He's been arrested and his mugshot published. He will spend much of his year in and out of courtrooms. On the campaign trail, his rambling speeches are gaffe-ridden and prone to malapropriisms and meltdowns. Well, we've all got our problems with the speaking of Louding, Dom. In a normal universe,
well
this
done, Michael.
Would not be the description of a fortunate man. But we do not live in that universe. And we must consider the very real and infuriating possibility that Donald J. Trump is the single luckiest politician who ever lived. For almost a decade, though it feels even longer, we've watched him trip through the minefields, totter on the edge of sinkholes, step on trapdoors each time thinking, this is it. Now he's going down. It has become a mantra of dashed hopes. The walls are once again closing in on Donald Trump. He's on the brink, desperate this time. Surely this time. And yet somehow he escapes. He continues to escape, Don. That's the frustrating part. The latest example of Trump luck was Colorado's decision, amid all his other legal problems, to ban him from the primary ballot using a novel legal theory. The Supreme Court smacked down Colorado on Monday, handing Trump a 9-0 victory that only makes him look stronger. Consider the good fortune that has blown his way in just the recent past. With a major criminal trial looming for trying to overturn the 2020 election results, the Supreme Court on February 28th threw him a lifeline on the immunity claim, you know, likely pushing his moment of reckoning past the election day. I'm not so sure.
We'll see.
The felony election interference case against him in Georgia has been thrown into disarray by alleged prosecutorial, let's call it hanky-panky, Dom. Trump was caught with a Florida stash of classified government documents, including war plans. But last spring, he somehow managed to draw the extraordinarily friendly Eileen Cannon as a judge in the case. He's lucky, like you, you little bastard.
Oh, come on. I have lots of points on this, but I will continue. Listen to what Charlie Sykes had to say at the Washington Post. Not my words. I will refute many of them when we're done. Another bullet point from Charlie, Trump being the luckiest politician of all time. On the campaign trail, Trump is prone to bouts of incoherence that seem to suggest he's losing it. But lucky man that he is, the Justice Department shows a special counsel whom Trump had appointed to be the U.S. Attorney for Maryland to investigate Biden's mishandling of classified documents, declining to charge him last month. The prosecutor made Biden's memory lapses the story. By now, this must feel like a familiar pattern. In 2016, with Trump less than 2 weeks from seemingly certain election defeat, Comey, the FBI director, decided to kneecap Hillary Clinton. Remember that? When an audio recording surfaced during the 2016 campaign, revealing Trump bragging about being able to grab women by the genitals, his opponents just knew he was done. They hadn't reckoned with Trump luck. His evangelical supporters, it turned out, were willing to shelve their morals to win an election.
And they'll do it again, Dom.
That year, Trump lost the popular vote by millions, but won the presidency in the Electoral College. Even he looked like a guy at a slot machine who can't believe it when the bells clang and the coins start flying. Indeed, Trump has been exceedingly fortunate in his opponents. In 2016, the Republican primaries ended with Trump facing only one serious challenger, Senator Ted Cruz, who had the distinction of possibly being the most loathed person in American politics. In the general, Trump faced probably the only Democrat who could not beat him. This year, the GOP's great non-Trump hope, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, imploded under the weight of his own jerkitude, and now an overwhelming majority of his voters think this 2024 opponent Biden, less than 4 years older than Trump, is too elderly to be given another term. For years, pundits wondered when the GOP would break with Trump. After Charlottesville, after 2020 defeat, after January 6th, after he called for the termination of the Constitution. But as we know, Trump has been deeply fortunate in the quality of the GOP establishment, whose feeble resistance to his various outrage was, to use H.L. Mencken's memorable phrase, not unlike that of a sheep trying to bark. In a stroke of extraordinary luck, Trump was saved from conviction in his second impeachment trial when Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell blinked at the crucial moment despite his certainty of Trump's guilt. Now it is McConnell who is heading to exile while Trump is surging toward the White House. So it has gone. Time and again, Trump has faced allegations that would sink any other politician, but has been handed counter-narratives, often bogus and tenacious, but nonetheless useful to deflect and distract in an endless round of whataboutism. Hunter Biden's laptop comes to mind, says Charlie Sykes. In his oddly charmed political life, Trump has benefited mightily from what political scientist Brian Klass calls the banality of crazy, as the body politic has grown increasingly numb to Trump's fire hose of malice. Even Trump must marvel at his good fortune to come on the scene at a time when Americans' memory has collapsed into a national amnesia, where politicians and voters alike simply can't remember the last abhorrent thing he said. It must feel almost providential to Trump that his rise to power has also coincided with the fall of much of the traditional fact-based media, as well as the emergence of just the sort of alternative reality information silos he needed to shape his narrative and platform his bluster, bombast, and fakery.
I would point out Charlie Sykes was one of them, but please continue.
I mean, that's how he knows. He speaks from experience. So now, despite all this, Trump is about to clinch the GOP nomination for the third time, and most national polls show he's leading President Biden as he seeks to return to the White House. Has anyone ever been this lucky? Wonders Charlie Sykes, one of the guys that started the all opinion piece in the Washington Post.
Hey, Charlie Sykes, the jerk store called and they're running out of you.
All right, now hang on now. I disagree in some regard, and this is why. The Teflon Don John Gotti was a Teflon Don until he wasn't the Teflon Don, right? Donald Trump was in politics. He was the president for 4 years. He barely in politics before that, right? Quote, unquote. He's had all this in his 8 years in politics. I don't know anyone else in politics who has had such a crappy record. The mishandling of a worldwide pandemic, the kowtowing to the Russians, the attempt to overthrow, you know, all these things that he's pointing out.
Yeah, but gas was so cheap then.
As why he's lucky. Well, he's lucky until he's not. You know what I mean? John Gotti was the Teflon Don until he wasn't.
So
the
you
fact that he's only been on the political circle for so very few electoral cycles, man. This guy is one of the most unlucky, terrible politicians we've ever seen. 91 felonies? This never happened. Okay, you go.
So you and Rachel Maddow still holding out hope that, you know, the arc of justice bends towards whatever. The arc of history bends towards justice.
Yes.
We just got to wait for the wheels to turn. They turn slowly.
Indeed.
Too damn slow, man.
Yeah, well, you know, that's how it is. Tell me about it, man. It sucks having to grow up and be an adult and wait for things to happen. I wish we could just yank them out and throw them in the pen, but we can't do that because otherwise they'd be able to do that to us. And I wish certainly that he didn't get three of those Supreme Court justices on there. Yada, yada, yada. But this is where we're at, man. And the guy's barely had his head up in politics, and he's got all this stuff coming at him. So he's either the luckiest guy in the world or the deep state must be really scared of him, and they're coming after him. Come on, look at what he's done, what he's charged with. This is all since he got involved in politics. None of these things. I mean, he had the bankruptcies and all the court cases and whatever. And certainly, perhaps, there's been other allegations.
No stranger to litigation, let's just say.
No. But when he decided to wade into these waters is when all of a sudden, all the criming and all the things for all the years have been percolating up to the surface. So, yeah, he's lucky until he's not.
Well, the only hope for democracy, I would say, is the fact that I have not forgotten the last important thing this man said. I have an excellent memory for Donald Trump's malfeasance.
What do you say today?
Who cares? Today?
Oh, yeah, I mean, he says something important every day.
I haven't seen yet anything substantially abhorrent that he said today.
Today.
But we don't know. Yeah, but wait till Super Tuesday results start coming in. Because by all indications, he is your favorite. It's going to win roughly 70% of the vote across about a third of the Republican electoral states tonight. He'll be basically the nominee in everything except, you know, convention. As of tonight, though, he's your guy. Your guy.
He's not my guy, man. He's
shook his hand. You share a birthday with the man.
He shook my hand and he shares my birthday, and he'll be in court in 20 days.
I'm just worried some of your blind luck rubbed off on him. Come back, more Devil's Advocates. Don't be lucky. Be good. Call us 844-967-2789.
The Talk of Green Bay, WGBW.
Most of us can agree we should have the freedom to make our own medical decisions. Politicians should have no role at all, but not California mega millionaire Eric Hovde. Hovde said, "I am totally opposed to abortion, and I'm 100% pro-life." And he supported overturning Roe v. Wade, the court case that protected abortion rights. Hovde's been supported by Wisconsin Right to Life, an extreme anti-abortion group that supports banning abortion, even in cases of rape and incest, and threatens doctors and nurses with criminal charges for providing abortion care. With views like that, Hovde could be a crucial vote in favor of a national abortion ban. letting politicians decide what's right for women. Call Eric Hovde at his California office at 714-730-4444. Tell him his position on abortion is dangerous for Wisconsin women. Paid for by A Better Wisconsin Together, Inc.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW, home for the Todd Allball Show.
60% of the time, they're right every time. The Devil's Advocates.
And if you're listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show, I love it when you join us on the lines. Just your opinion, your thoughts, 844-967-2789.
Dominic, we mentioned Rubin. We'll get there. Jennifer Rubin claims she is a formerly conservative columnist at the Washington Post. The Supreme Court did Trump no favors. He'll be facing a fall trial. Is this the October surprise, Dom? The change perhaps of luck you keep predicting? You and Rachel Maddow, man, you guys are the ultimate optimist that something bad's going to befall this guy.
Well, I mean, it's not, number one, he'll lose the election. I don't believe that, even if he makes it that far, with all the turmoil.
You don't believe
whatnot.
All the polling that currently would seem to indicate he's
I understand that, and I don't. But what are your thoughts, man? All the times we saw John Gotti in court smiling with those suits on, getting away with it. He got away with it so much they called him the Teflon Don, getting away with it, until he didn't. And then he died in prison, and no one calls him the Teflon Don anymore. He died in prison. So yeah. Trump's gotten away with it so far. He's really lucky. Yeah, he's lucky to be born, you know, to a millionaire. He's lucky to have not squandered all the money that he got, despite his best efforts. He's lucky in a lot of regards. But he's not. I don't think he got to the presidency, and in some way, shape, or form, that will be his downfall, man.
Well, I hope you're right, Dom. Be a first, but I hope you're right in this case. Here's what Rubin writes. While leaving him on the ballot in the 14th Amendment case, but refusing to rule out the January 6, 2021 was an insurrection, the Supreme Court has taken every opportunity to delay four-time indicted former President Donald Trump's January 6 trial. In late December, the court declined to consider the absolute immunity claims, preferring to wait for the ruling from the U.S. Court of Appeals for the D.C. Circuit. After the appellate decision, the High Court was not obliged to take the case. It could have affirmed summarily. Nevertheless, after nearly 2 weeks, the court decided it did need to take the case, then set the hearing for April 22nd. Trump's team undoubtedly celebrated the latest delay. But should it? You, Rubin, have joined the optimists. As a preliminary matter, the Justice Department has clarified that its guideline to refrain from initiating indictments or investigations about 60 days before an election is inapplicable to pending cases that a court schedules during the time frame. So the 60-day guideline, throw that out the window. These are all active cases. Cases that are ready to go can start regardless of the campaign calendar. So that's good news for you, fella. Here's more. The Supreme Court could, as it did in Watergate, emergency cases involving the coronavirus or Bush v. Gore, move promptly and decide the immunity case within a few weeks of the hearing. Norman Eisen and Matthew Siegelman and Joshua Kolb at Just Security explained, for example, in the U.S. v. Nixon, the court held oral arguments July 8th of 74, and issued its decision 16 days later, July 24th of 74, an interval of 3 weeks. If the court were to follow the example here, we would receive a decision around May 13th. I don't think they're going to move with alacrity, Dom. No, arguably, any further delay would look hyper-partisan even for this court. What, is Clarence Thomas worried about being hyper-partisan? Alito? Roberts, who's worried about their bad reputation at this point? Here's more, Dom. With a May ruling, Judge Tanya Chutkan could stick to her schedule. You know, she could basically start trial on August 2nd. The trial would run through the campaign's final months. Trump, rather than campaigning in the last months of the campaign, would be sitting, pouting if his previous courtroom demeanor is predictive in court. During the fall, daily testimony concerning the 2020 coup attempt would be front and center. As Eisen, Siegelman, and Kolb calculated, if the trial starts on August 2nd and lasts 8 months, it will be submitted to the jury September 27th. If the trial lasts 12 weeks, it will be submitted to the jury October 25th. That'd be getting real late, Dom. Do you think we'd get a conviction right before the election? That would be a little bit of a take a wind out of the sailor, wouldn't it?
You think, Crudy?
Dom, that schedule is Trump's worst nightmare. Then FBI Director James Comey claimed 11 days before the 2016 election that new documents had turned up concerning former Secretary of State and 2016 Democratic presidential nominee Hillary Clinton's emails. That threw a monkey wrench into the campaign, arguably costing her the election. Here, an October guilty verdict, even if appealed, would be curtains for the MAGA crowd. It's a little bit more there, Dom. You want to take some?
I'll jump in, Crudy. What if the court's decision requires further fact-finding to apply its holdings? Ergo, does the indictment involve official acts? If Chutkan needs to hear evidence outlining his complicity in the coup, voters would still get an earful about Trump's betrayal of the Constitution. If Chutkan instead could rule on the indictment allegation, not much time would be lost. Alternatively, Just Securities authors calculated a trial date around September 20th if the Supreme Court slow walks a ruling on the immunity claim until the end of June, the session's traditional endpoint. A verdict would be nearly impossible before the election, but the campaign's close would be consumed with testimony about Trump's alleged involvement in the coup. That would be nearly as devastating as a verdict. A few other considerations from Jennifer Rubin at the Washington Post. If any prospect of starting the January 6th trial before the election evaporates, if the Supreme Court ruling leaves application of immunity to this case less than airtight, after Chutkan rules, Trump might take another interlocutory appeal, effectively foreclosing any pretrial election. Second, however, no serious lawyer thinks the court would agree to Trump's that Trump enjoys absolute immunity for alleged crimes in office. Even a court this partisan could not countenance immunity for assassinating political enemies, as the D.C. court postulated. Whatever the timing, therefore, the court almost certainly would issue a stark rebuke to Trump's fantasy of absolute immunity. Voters would still have the benefit of the court's rejection of his view of the presidency as dangerous and unconstitutional, infuriating Trump and giving President Biden a powerful closing message. Third, the January 6th trial delays have opened up the calendar. New York's hush money trial is scheduled to get underway March 25th. They likely May verdict. Disregard pundits sneering. The facts and the law strongly favor prosecutors. A conviction, maybe with an embarrassing cross-examination if Trump insists on testifying, surely would be a blow to Trump. The first former president convicted of a felony would dominate the news, as would discussion about whether to incarcerate him. It is also possible, although unlikely, given Judge Eileen Cannon's slow-walking, that the January 6th delays would allow the trial for Trump's alleged mishandling of classified documents to begin, if not finish, before the decision. Special Counsel Jack Smith wants to start the case in July. Trump's lawyers counteroffered in August. A trial highlighting Trump's disdain for national security and alleged obstruction of justice would easily monopolize all campaign coverage. And fourth, beginning but not completing the January 6th and/or classified document trials before the election would have a silver lining. The prosecution could present devastating evidence without risk of losing before voters cast ballots. Any not guilty verdict would give Trump an enormous boost, vindicating his persecution claim. But despite the sloth-like pace of the Supreme Court, through much of the fall, Trump likely will be off the trail and on trial as voters get nonstop reminders about his contempt for the law. Jennifer Rubin, a conservative ? Columnist for the Washington Post. I tend to agree with her in this case.
You're banking on timing. More devils. More
of your phone American calls. People, baby.
844-96-PARTY.
Tuesday on Nightlight, I welcome entertainment reporter Rob Thomas and sports reporters Jimmy Cuska and Mike Clemens. It's Nightlight with Pete Schwabba from 7 to 9 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is your hometown radio, refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Recent rainy weather has somewhat lowered the risk of wildfires in Wisconsin. The Department of Natural Resources says most of the state's midsection is at a low level of danger, while southern and eastern Wisconsin are still at high risk. 138 wildfires have burned about 300 acres of land in Wisconsin already this year. March is National Reading Month. Wisconsin librarians say kids read books if they like the topics and the formats, like graphic novels for preteens.
It is a lot of dialogue. Sometimes there's some context, you know, paragraphs and stuff in there, but it gives kids that visual, and sometimes they need that to keep going.
Blaze Burton works at the Mercer Library. He says kids respond better when teachers and parents take an informal approach. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News. Now here's what you need to know closer to home.
For WISS WGBW News, I'm Lisa Hale. André Jacques is running for Congress. The Republican Wisconsin State Senator from De Pere announces his bid for the 8th Congressional District. His announcement sets up a Republican primary for the race, as former State Senator Roger Roth of Appleton is running and Alec Brusewitz, a GOP consultant, is also considering a run. The 8th Congressional District, which leans Republican, includes the cities of Green Bay, Oshkosh, and Appleton. No Democrat has announced a challenge for the open seat vacated by the retirement of Representative Mike Gallagher. The Green Bay Area Public School District appoints Vicki Bayer to interim superintendent for the second time in 2 years. Bayer also served in that position from April 2022 to June of 2023. Former Superintendent Claude Tiller Jr. resigned after he was put on administrative leave for comments made on an Atlanta radio show. And that's what you need to know. I'm Lisa Hale, WISS WGBW News.
Don't you wish your life came with a warning app?
Stop. That dog does not want to be petted.
A heads up before something bad happens.
You should not send that text.
Uh-oh. Life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. With early diagnosis and a few healthy changes, you can reverse prediabetes and prevent or delay type 2 diabetes. To learn your risk, take the one-minute test today at doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its prediabetes awareness partners.
I'm Pete with a 60-second Showbiz Beat. University of Wisconsin-Madison film studies professor and scholar David Bordwell passed away on February 29th at the age of 76 due to degenerative lung disease. According to Variety, UW described Bordwell as a prolific film researcher and passionate cinephile. Bordwell taught at the University of Wisconsin from 1973 until his retirement in 2004. The title of Taylor Swift's new album, Tortured Poets Department, is not random. According to a report in the New York Post, the 34-year-old Swift is a descendant of legendary and tortured poet Emily Dickinson. Dickinson was a 19th century poet who wrote over 1,800 poems. Taylor Swift has over 240 songs and dates a guy who can sing the Beastie Boys at a karaoke level just before closing time. Needless to say, Swift has a ways to go if she wants to catch up with Dickinson in regards to verse. She is, however, crushing her cousin when it comes to social media followers. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, every night between 7 and 9 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Tonight, mostly clear, a low in the upper 20s, and mostly sunny for tomorrow, a nice day with highs into the upper 40s. A mixture of sunshine and clouds Thursday, approaching 50 degrees, then a chance of rain Thursday night into Friday. It's 42 right now.
Hi, I'm Maggie Dawn, host of The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays at 2 on the Civic Media Network.
And I'm Stuart J. Waddles, Civic Media's Southeast Wisconsin News Bureau Chief.
Stuart and I will be hosting special coverage of President Biden's State of the Union speech Thursday night at 8.
We'll, of course, present what the president says, the Republican response, and also talk about what it all means for you.
This will be one of the most important speeches from the president in this critical election year.
This Thursday night at 8 across the Civic Media Radio Network.
From I-43 to I-41. This is the Talk of Green Bay. 1590 AM and 97.9 FM WGBW.
Save the $2 on tomorrow's paper. Listen to the Devil's Advocates today.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, a Super Tuesday edition, a happier happy hour. Dom, it's been 50 years coming, but trickle-down economics, we've We've done the research.
Yeah.
We've got the answers. I think we know whether or not trickle down economics works.
Bueller? Anyone? Anyone?
It does not work. We've got the research. We've got the math. This is still a talking point from everyone from Rick Scott to Scotty Wanker, right? They still believe, they're still touting this as their economic agenda. Tax cuts for rich people, and eventually they'll trickle them down to us. Well, according to CBS News, 50 years of tax cuts for the rich failed to trickle down. There is a new economic study. They cover this in part, Dom. Tax cuts for the wealthy have long drawn support from conservative lawmakers and economists who argue that such measures will trickle down and eventually boost jobs and incomes for everyone else.
Everyone.
That trickle down will lift all boats, right, Dom? But a new study from the London School of Economics says 50 years of such tax cuts have only helped one group. Anyone? The rich! The rich have gotten richer! The new paper by David Hope of the London School of Economics and Julian Lindbergh of King's College London examines 18 developed countries from Australia to the United States over a 50-year time period. So this is not, you know, microeconomics. This is not just a specific economy. This is the broader study of whether or not trickle-down economics, tax cuts for the rich, whether they trickle down to the rest of us. The study was from 1965 to 2015, Dom, and the study compared countries that passed tax cuts in a specific year. Think 1982, when President Ronald Reagan slashed taxes on the wealthy, with lows that didn't, and then examined their economic outcomes. Seems pretty straightforward to me, Dom.
It sure does.
Now, per capita, gross domestic product, and unemployment rates were nearly identical after 5 years in countries that slashed taxes on the rich and in those that didn't, the study found. So whether or not you cut taxes on the rich people, you have generally the same economic outcomes. But analysis discovered one major change. The incomes of the rich grew much faster in countries where tax cuts were lowered. Instead of trickling down to the middle class, tax cuts for the rich may not accomplish much more than help the rich keep more of their riches and exacerbate income inequality, the research indicates. Here's a quote, Tom. Seems like pretty straightforward stuff to me. Ferris Bueller's teacher knew it back then, right? Ben Stein. You could win Ben Stein's money on Comedy Central once upon a time. Here is what they said. And the crazy thing is, Ben Stein, I believe, actually believes in trickle-down economics. Based on our research, we would argue that economic rationale for keeping taxes on the rich low is weak. Julian Lindbergh, co-author of the study and the lecturer in public policy at King's College London, said in an email to CBS's Money Watch, in fact, if we look back into history, the period with the highest taxes on the rich, the post-war period, were also a period with the highest economic growth and low unemployment. It's almost like there's a correlation there, Dom. If you raise taxes on the rich, they're forced to reinvest in their businesses and their employees. But if you cut taxes on the rich, like we do here in the state of Wisconsin, through an obscene manufacturers and agricultural tax credit, do you know those industries in the state of Wisconsin pay 0.4%? 0.4%. My kid working, you know, for minimum wage effectively, 17-year-old, he pays FICA, SUTA, and federal taxes and state taxes. But not if you're a manufacturing or ag interest in this state, and that's an uncapped mandate, and we've been blowing the budget on that since Scotty Wanker was the governor.
I think they do some 0.4%. That's 40 basis points for those financial folks out there.
Yes, less than 1% taxation they pay for the right to be manufacturers here in the state of Wisconsin. And have we seen manufacturing growth? under Scott Walker or otherwise? Anyone?
They were manufacturers before. It was not for the right. It was just a giveaway, man. It was just a giveaway.
And they got richer. Diane Hendricks got richer.
Yes, yes.
The U-Lines got richer. And they also got that designated S-Corp cut in the 2017 Trump tax cut. So more of the trickle down and more kickbacks to guys like Ron Johnson. Thanks, Ron.
The analysis ends in 2015, so it doesn't include the Trump tax cuts, but they said they wouldn't expect the results from that cut to be much different than historical. Already, Trump's tax cuts have lifted the fortunes of the ultra-rich, according to 2019 research from two prominent economists from the University of California, Berkeley. For the first time in a century, the 400 richest American families paid lower in taxes in 2018 than people in the middle class, they found. The careful new research from the London School of Economics suggests, indeed, that tax increases on the wealthy should be considered post-COVID. You think? To be sure, the economy was humming along before the pandemic struck the nation in March with an unemployment rate that was its lowest in about a half a century. Conservative think tanks such as the American Enterprise Institute pointed to Trump's tax cut as the engine for stronger economic growth. Yet even so, millions of American families struggled to find jobs that paid living wages, while the cost of essentials such as healthcare, housing, and education increased at faster rates than the typical income. Even before the pandemic, income inequality had reached its highest point in 50 years, according to the census data. In 2020, the pandemic had worsened inequities across all spectrums, touching racial, gender, and educational divides. When the economy shut down in March, workers who couldn't transition to remote work, typically lower-paid employees involved in retail, service, and hospitality jobs, were hit the hardest. At the same time, white-collar workers generally fared better as they were more likely to maintain their jobs as they shifted to remote work. Investors also benefited as the stock market rallied in hopes of an economic recovery, a development that doesn't help most low- and middle-income class workers. Only about half of the U.S. population is invested in the stock market through their retirement and savings accounts, and even more, 80% of all stocks, Curdy, are owned by the richest 10%. So, yeah, but a little more on this. I want to throw this one out there. I've referenced it before, and I think it bears repeating. From the Center for American Progress, they did a study, a report, tax cuts primarily responsible for the increasing debt ratio. So there's more to it than this, and just bear with me for a paragraph here. Tax cuts initially enacted during Republican trifectas over the last 25 years slashed taxes disproportionately for the wealthy and profitable corporations, severely reducing federal revenues. In fact, relative to earlier projections, spending is down and not up. But revenues are down significantly more. If not for the Bush tax cuts and their extensions, as well as the Trump tax cuts, revenues would be on track to keep pace with spending indefinitely, and the debt ratio, that's debt as a percentage of the economy, would be declining. Instead, these tax cuts have added $10 trillion to the debt since their enactment and are responsible for 57% of the increase in the debt ratio since 2001, and more than 90% of the increase in the debt ratio if the one-time costs of bills responding to the COVID pandemic and the Great Recession are excluded. Eventually, the tax cuts are projected to grow to more than 100% of the increase. When we talk about the debt that we're carrying now, we talk about the inflation and the interest on the debt, all these things. Well, it ties back to this very issue. So not only are they putting more money in the pockets of the wealthy and the rich and increasing the income disparity and causing all sorts of angst with people, they're also adding a bunch of money to the debt and the interest that we would not have to pay otherwise had we not given away the store on a false promise of trickle-down economics. And I don't know if they believed it or not, Crudy, but they're certainly selling it, and they still do, and it never worked.
Well, how would these same said Republicans go about balancing that federal debt, Dom? By, of course, cutting your Social Security benefits, your earned benefits.
Right.
Money you put in and you get back. Well, Ron Johnson would call it a Ponzi scheme. My guy, Senator Bernie Sanders, put this proposition out just a little while ago. I think this would be closer to a solution, my friend. As Republicans threaten cuts to Social Security and other essential federal programs, Senator Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, along with Reps Jan Schakowsky and Val Hoyle of Oregon in the U.S. House of Representatives introduce legislation that would expand Social Security benefits by $2,400 a year, about $200 per month, and ensure Social Security is fully funded for the next 75 years, all without raising taxes by one penny on over 93% of American households that make less than $250,000 a year. You know how they're going to solve this problem, Dom? They're going to lift the Social Security caps on those that make over $250,000 a year. They can solve this imbalance. Republicans would hope to balance the whole federal budget on poor people collecting their Social Security. But Bernie Sanders, my guy, along with Elizabeth Warren and a few thoughtful Democratic Congress people, has a 75-year solution endorsed by the federal actuarial people. They like his plan. They say it solves problems.
No-brainer, man.
Here is a statement. Dom, at a time when nearly half of older Americans have no retirement savings and almost 50% of our nation's seniors are trying to survive on an income of less than 25 grand a year, our job is not to cut Social Security, said my guy Bernie Sanders. Our job is to expand Social Security so that every senior in America can retire with dignity that they deserve, and every person with a disability can live with the security they need. The legislation that we are introducing today will expand Social Security benefits by $2,400 a year and will extend the solvency of Social Security for the next 75 years by making sure the wealthiest people in our society pay their fair share into the system. Right now, a Wall Street CEO who makes $30 million pays the same amount into Social Security as someone who makes $160,000 a year. Our bill puts an end to that absurdity, which will allow us to protect Social Security for generations to come while lifting millions of seniors out of poverty. You know, that has been the most successful program in America's history for lifting seniors out of poverty. If you didn't have a multi-generational household once upon a time, there's a good chance your grandma, great-grandma, she's eating cat food before Social Security.
I know, I get what you're saying, but you're not even thinking about the cat food manufacturers when their products went south.
Well, they got a tax cut in 2017.
Okay, so all right.
Ron Johnson and Trump looked out for them. 844-967-2789. Let's get to the phones. Wisco Paul, welcome. What do you got for us?
Hey, Paulie.
Hey, good afternoon, Devils. You guys are making too much sense. Trickle-down economics was bad, but the worst thing was Trump's tax cuts. They've added to the deficit, and, of course, I'm no economist, but what you guys are talking about, I wish more people would listen to, so then we wouldn't have to worry about another term of Trump, because it makes too much sense. If you put money into older folks' pockets, they'll spend it. People who spend money create jobs. So thanks for I'm getting it out there, and maybe, hopefully, some people will listen to what you guys are saying, and they'll carry that to the ballot box this fall. Thanks for the info, boys.
Well, thanks for listening, Whistle Paul. Nobody wants to pay more taxes, but our society is based on we the people. I say that for L.A. Tom. I see he's in the queue. Be patient, Tom. You could be next. But we the people, right? This is supposed to be the United States. And we the people believe in fairness, do we not? Rich people should not get a better deal than the rest of us. We're the ones that built this country. We're the ones that continue to lift this country. I'm sick of rich people getting a better tax deal than me and Dom. It's about us.
Well, you know what? If everyone else was just investing a lobbyist and, you know, spread all that money out to some politicians, maybe things would change.
You know, I've often thought to myself, it would have been cheaper to buy a couple of Republican politicians than a radio station any day of the week. Come back. Your final thoughts. More Devils.
The Talk of Green Bay, WGBW. Keeping you informed, entertained, and connected to your local community. Here's Terry Barr with the Civic Media Radio Network.
Talking about problems in the community is the first step for the Green Bay-based We All Rise African American Resource Center. But talking has to lead to helping. Executive Director Robin Scott.
They're in need of skill building, education, introduction to the workforce, and support along the way. We don't heal in silos.
Scott says since the nonprofit started a few years ago, more than 2,000 people have used the center to change their lives.
As a community, when we're all thinking about, you know, being the best version of ourselves, we have to ensure that we're being real. And I feel like when you have nonprofits in your community, that organizations that are on the ground and doing the work, and they're willing to acknowledge exactly what's going on, that's a sign of a future of a healthy city.
Learn more about this important resource at weallriseaarc.org. Until next time, I'm Terry Barr.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW, home for Matt Nair on air.
Now, what starts with the letter C? Cookie starts with C. Let's think of other things that starts with C.
The Devil's Advocates, the fix for political junkies everywhere.
Cookie, that's good enough for me. C is for cookie. That's good enough for me.
Yeah, thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show, our last segment of the day. If you have something to say, hit us up right now on the lines at 844-967-2789. And I love cookies. I'm getting hungry now.
You know, Nate asked me if this was a plea for cookies today. I said, no, this is a sign of solidarity with the Cookie Monster. You see what he was tweeting out this week? Gerrod Brown noticed, the senator from Ohio. You should pay attention to Cookie Monster's Twitter feed. Cookie Monster tweeted on the platform formerly known as Twitter. That one's still working today. Me hate shrinkflation. Me cookies are getting smaller. Senator Sherrod Brown, Democrat from Ohio, called out companies for shrinkflation Monday after Sesame Street's Cookie Monster expressed frustration with the practice in a social media post. Brown, who serves as the chair on the Senate Banking Committee, agreed with the fuzzy blue Sesame Street character, I would say icon Dom, and slammed companies for shrinking the size of their products without cutting prices. At two, Cookie Monster. No, he said, me too, Cookie Monster. Brown wrote on Twitter, big corporations shrink the size of their products without shrinking their prices, all to pay the CEO bonuses. People in my state of Ohio are fed up. They should get all the cookie they pay for. I've never agreed more.
Come on. Really?
Senator Bob Casey also replied to Cookie Monster's post Monday saying, I'm on it. He's on the shrinkflation, apparently, Dom. Both Brown and Casey are bracing for tough re-election fights in November. Former President Trump won Ohio in 16 and 20, and he won Pennsylvania in 16. That's where Casey's from, before narrowly losing the state to Biden 4 years later. The White House similarly took aim at shrinkflation last month ahead of the Super Bowl, with Biden releasing a video slamming the practice as a ripoff. Some companies are trying to pull a fast one by shrinking their products little by little and hoping you won't notice. Give me a break. The American public is tired of being played for suckers. I'm calling on companies to put a stop to this. Well, Dom, we have not shrunk the Devil's Advocates product. We've expanded more free Devil's Advocates 3 hours each and every day. If you didn't know, you got to start tuning in on WMDX. 3 o'clock Central Time. Sometimes Dom joins, other times fashionably late. But tomorrow, tomorrow I got Scott Ross starting at 3:30. Going to hold him over till Dom joins, so 4:20. Nice long conversation with our Gemini flamethrowing buddy.
I look forward to that. Curdy, I get the sentiment, and it's essentially just another way of raising prices, right? So but what I would say is these things it's regulated, right? So they're labeled and regulated. The ounces or grams or liters, they're all on there.
Come on, man. Don't be throwing the metric system at me. I'm an American.
It's all It's all measured. Now, you may not notice, but it's not like they're telling you they're selling you a gallon and it's a half gallon. They're just selling you a little bit less for the same price.
But you know they're misleading you because they're using the same side packaging. You know, they don't shrink the box.
Come on, man. Really? Yes. Companies are in business to make money. Shocking.
You know, if I found a company that was cutting my cookie size, I would have to boycott that company.
Oh, really?
I would hold it against them.
Are the Girl Scout cookies the same? I'm not clear.
What's that?
The Girl Scout cookies. Were they they seem to have shrunk over the years too, right? A lot of things seem to. But before it was supersized and everything, right? Now we're concerned about shrinkage.
Hey, don't be worried about my health at this late hour.
I mean, come on, man. It's always something. And these guys are running for office. And listen, if pay attention, you are the buyers, folks. You're smart people. If you're buying something, if you think it's not getting what you want, then you know, buy something else or don't buy it. Very simple. That's how you tell the companies that their prices are too high. You don't buy the product.
Well, me and Cookie Monster, we're going to boycott 844-967-2789. I will boycott cookies. L.A. Tom, we the people, my friend.
Hey, Tom.
That's right, guys. First off, we the people ultimately are the government, and we must never forget it. The corporations are not the government. We are. Remember that united we stand, divided we fall. And there's only one party that actually said that they're going to implement the strategy called divide and conquer. And I'd like all the Republicans to really take that in. And if they want, they can go check it out on YouTube, where Walker said to Widow Hendricks a few years back that he's going to implement a strategy called divide and conquer. And you tell me, what is American about that? I would just like to know. Also, it's the Republican policies actually that cause more dependency on we the people government. Because if they're giving tax breaks to the billionaire class and the people at the lower end and the middle class, even people up to, you know, $200,000 a year, you know, where they can't make it as much. So therefore, they have to get subsidies or they have to get money from we the people government. And whereas when the Democrats are actually investing in education, investing in kids and all these different things, then there's not as much of a need for government and the social safety net as much as there is when the Republicans take it, everything that there possibly is. So, and the only thing I would say about the cookie thing is that if there's only one cookie manufacturer out there in terms of monopolies, and you have no referees on the field to actually regulate, or to put referees on the field to referee the game of capitalism, then all of a sudden there is nowhere else to go. So, you know, we have to think about that as well, that competition is good, and it's good when it's an even playing field, and that takes we the people government to actually put those regulations into place.
Hey, real quick, Tom, I believe you got a primary to vote in today. Katie Porter, Adam Schiff, Steve Garvey, who are you voting for U.S. Senate from California?
Well, I have to tell you this. All day long, people have been coming up to me, and I've been hearing it everywhere, Dementia Don. I don't know what they keep on saying, Dementia Don. So I'm wondering, they must be talking about Trump and his dementia, and his face is falling off his skin is falling off his face. I don't know what the hell he's doing, but that's happening. Anyway, I would have wanted Katie Porter. However, I think it will be Adam Schiff. And I think Adam Schiff is going to make a great senator.
Excellent, Tom. More cookies for me. Adam Schiff looks like a skinny guy. Thank you all for listening. Tomorrow, Scott Ross joins the political party. Hope you all show up in the 3 o'clock hour. More Devil's Advocates for less money. Still free. It's a good price all the way around.
From the home of the frozen tundra, Green Bay's choice for news talk, 1590 AM and 97.9 FM WGBW.
Hey everybody, it's Todd Albo. Wednesday noon till 2, we will review Super Tuesday results with Trigby Olson and Pat Kreitlow, plus your calls on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Now, we tend not to think about now. We dream about tomorrow, relive yesterday. But right now in front of us is victory over cancer. Right now, cancer research funded by the V Foundation is leading to better treatments and saving lives. Victory over cancer is there for the taking by you, because today's cancer research is tomorrow's victory. Learn more at V.org.
Don't give up. Don't ever give up.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay. WGBW 1590 AM Denmark. W250 CV Green Bay. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is a special report from ABC News. Your voice, your vote. Super Tuesday. I'm Daria Albinger. ABC News.